Hey, welcome to the Charter Central podcast. My name is Orlando Castellan. We are so excited because we just got done recording a segment with Dan Quisenberry from MAPSA. That'll be shortly upcoming. What did you think about that, Jonathan, having a 20-year veteran in here of the charter school movement?
I thought it was great. It's great hearing from Dan, and one of the things I found most interesting was his take on the state budget and how it might all play out and its impact on our schools and charter schools across the state, and whether they will receive potentially the funding that originally was planned or promised to them.
Janelle, he also talked about some storytelling.
Yeah, it was great to hear some insight from Dan on a story that really truly impacted him from one of his visits to a CMU partner school. So stay tuned and hear more about how that really changed his perspective.
Well, thank you, and stay tuned. The interview with Dan Quisenberry coming up shortly, and thanks for joining us on our second podcast.
Welcome to Charter Central, a podcast for education leaders.
Welcome to Charter Central, a podcast for education leaders brought to you by Central Michigan University, the Center for Charter Schools, a leader in educational choice and quality. Good morning. My name is Orlando Castellan, and I'm joined here in studio by two of my colleagues, Janelle Brzezinski and Jonathan Arnenberg.
Good morning.
Hello.
And as we start today, we want to remind everyone as we're moving here into our second episode that the podcast is available on our website. It's thecenterforcharters.org. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and all of your other favorite podcast platforms. So make sure and subscribe to us so you don't miss any of the episodes. And if you're out on Apple Podcasts or any of the other platforms, we'd love if you would leave a review for us. And certainly we're welcoming feedback as this is our second episode and we're excited to be here with everybody. So make sure and subscribe and go out and find us.
Also wanted to remind folks that as we kick off the new school year, that we have a number of professional learning opportunities, professional development opportunities available, sponsored by the center. We have our board development series events. We have academic performance learning opportunities. We have new board member orientations, board member roundtables. If you have any interest in attending one of our many events located all across the state, please look to our website for more details.
And I'm reminded, as you say that, Jonathan, that we've also released our date for the annual conference in 2020, and that's going to be August 18th. So for those of you that like to plan ahead, August 18th, 2020 for the center's annual conference.
And we have a lot of events and professional development, as Jonathan and Orlando mentioned. We also have another really important resource as you're looking to continue your education, as either possibly if you're a school leader listening or a teacher in one of CMU's partner schools. We have what we call the Charter School Educator Award, and the cycle is currently open for that. So what it is a 50% tuition award towards a graduate program in education at Central Michigan University. Obviously, CMU is being a leader in teacher preparation, has many great programs and graduate programs available. So as somebody that's in a CMU partner school, if you're a school leader or teacher, we really encourage you to take advantage of that. There's more information available on our website. And so far, for the life of this program, we've had 59 graduates with their graduate degrees from CMU. So really feel it's important to offer that as a resource and really providing all of our teachers and school leaders that wonderful opportunity to continue their education if that's what they choose to do, and offer that as an opportunity for you here at CMU.
We also like to take a moment to recognize one of our partner schools for a major accomplishment. Eagle Crest Charter Academy, one of our CMU partner schools, was recently named a National Blue Ribbon School. So we'd like to extend our greatest congratulations to Eagle Crest for all the great work that they do and for that major accomplishment.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for those updates. I'm reminded as I'm listening to that, that we are celebrating our 25th year anniversary of charter schools and excited to be able to celebrate that 25th year with one of our schools being named a National Blue Ribbon School. We'll have to make sure that we also mention that to Dan Quisenberry, who's going to be our guest here in studio here in a couple minutes. Dan is the president of MAPSA, the Michigan State Charter Association. MAPSA stands for the Michigan Association of Public School Academies. He's a 20-year veteran of the charter school movement, and we are very grateful to be having him just shortly here in the podcast studio, and we will welcome him shortly. So we are here in studio with Dan Quisenberry, the president of MAPSA. Dan, can you please give us a brief history and understanding of what MAPSA is?
Yeah, absolutely, and great to be here with you guys today. So MAPSA, it's a Michigan Association of Public School Academies. It reflects the voice of the Michigan charter school community. That's the way we describe it. But everybody who's involved in Michigan's charter schools is somehow connected to what we do. And schools across the state are members, more than 85% of them. But we try to have a connection with just about anybody involved with charter schools in Michigan.
And so that means that you're providing resources for folks across the state. Can you tell us a little bit about the resources that you guys are focused on?
Yeah, our taglines are advocate, support, and connect. And so the resources fall in those latter two, supporting and connecting. Describe a couple of them. Supporting things like the symposium that's coming up here real quickly on December 11th and 12th in Novi, Michigan. Opportunity for educators to get together, and doesn't replace what people do with professional development, but hopefully inspires and connects people in a different way than they can on their own. And we'd love to have people there to see them this year, but supporting activities like that. We've inspired some alternative certification activity just because talent is such a big problem for people today and finding the educators in key places. But connecting is another idea, Orlando, that we think about. Connecting means something, it's nothing like this, but Amazon, you know, Amazon's nothing more than a connector. It puts buyers and sellers together and things like that. So we try to bring people together that are interested in charter schools or do something with charter schools in Michigan. And yeah, there's a lot of activity we do with that.
And so I see that in that idea of connecting, you have a storytellers event coming up in Detroit. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what you're hoping to accomplish with those events?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a new idea we've inspired this year. I've had support from Central Michigan University's Charter School Office. Thank you for that. We've understood for what we're in this now for 25 years, people still don't understand charter schools. And then facts, figures, and the data don't always do enough either. So what's really important for people is, what impact are you having on real human beings, kids, families, communities, educators? So these storytelling events are an opportunity for people to share some of those real stories. And yeah, we've had Detroit's event. Turned out to be a very big success. We've got one scheduled in the spring and winter here in Lansing, and then in Grand Rapids later in the year. So we're excited about it.
Yeah, these events really, like you're saying, have showcased these individual stories, truly the impact that charters have had on them, and in turn, the impact they're having on their students. As you've been in the charter movement for more than 20 years, can you share with us maybe one or two of the stories that truly have impacted you to show that this is why you're passionate about this work and this is why you keep making sure that students have these opportunities?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of the joke, Janelle, in our office. The staff starts asking me questions to get some of those stories out of Dan's brain because they know they're buried there somewhere. One of the more recent ones I like to share with people because it's out of the box of what people think about. So this is not all charter schools, but there is a charter school inside the facility, the Adjudicated Youth Center in Wayne County, the ACE Academy. And I had the chance to go there because they kept asking me to come. These two young sophomore men, multiple felonies. Think about that for a second. These are sophomore boys that have multiple felonies for some reason. They had earned the right to take me on a tour that day, to get out of their orange jumpsuits and wear some khaki pants and a white shirt. And they were nervous at first, but by the time it got going, they were excited to show me about their school and what was happening there. We got to the library, which was not, for all of us, very impressive, but it did have a lot of shelves and a lot of books. And they started telling me things they wanted to read and that they were excited about reading. And we had a discussion about that. And they realized and shared with me, "Mr. Quisenberry, this school has changed my life. I am so excited about reading." Okay, well, that school's changing those kids' trajectory in life, and that's what we ought to be doing more of. So, yeah, lots of stories, lots of human impact that charter schools are having in Michigan.
And those stories are critical for us to hear to understand the impact that they're having and the value that charter schools, the authorizers, and the association brings to the state of Michigan, and we're appreciative of that. So it sounds like multiple events coming up, the symposium in the Detroit community. What was the date on that, Dan?
Yeah, December 11th and 12th at the Detroit Marriott in Troy. That's always a little tricky, but it's right there just off of 75 in Troy, Michigan. And we'll be doing seminars on some of the hot topics of the day. Everyone's talking about trauma and the things that kids are going through. We are talking about the storytelling and how to do that better, because it's an important thing, not just for advocacy, for everybody to learn to talk about who they are, what they do. And there's the board track series that I know CMU and the authorizers generally are helping us put together. So we're excited about that. And then, of course, the event of the evening on December 11th, we're calling it the social, but we're really trying to create the place for people just to come together every year that don't otherwise get a chance to see each other in the charter school community.
So the connections piece of MAPSA, the Michigan Association of Public School Academies, the connections piece, the symposium, the storytellers, thank you for sharing both of those with us. But then there's an advocacy piece as well. And so as we were thinking about the advocacy piece that MAPSA does, we thought about some of the myths that are commonly repeated in education. And so I'm gonna take a crack at one of them, one of those myths, and would love to hear your response, which is that charter schools do not use certified teachers.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it? Absolutely, they're certified. And don't find that across the country, so it's an easy myth to cast. There's also a reference there that they're not quality. I don't know how that works when we are outperforming our peers on academics. You have to have good educators to do that. So, yeah, absolutely, that requires certified educators.
And another myth that we hear quite often is that charter schools are not public schools. I'm sure something you hear often is, what is your response to that, and what can schools maybe do to combat that as they're out in their communities as well?
Yeah, absolutely, they're public schools, and I think we all take that too far. We're defenders and promoters of public education. We are part of the public education system. Makes the recent stuff with the budget even more offensive that somehow people think it's okay to single out some public school kids and not all public school kids. We're just part of the public education system. It's a different way to deliver education to students with public funding and all the public rules and regulations that come with it.
Unfortunately, there are so many charter myths for us to choose from, which, kind of speaks to, the state of our movement, which is, can be unfortunate, the fact that we have so many. I think the one that really sticks out to me, and maybe it might not be as much of a myth, but it's one of those things that when I'm having a conversation with somebody that isn't quite as familiar with charter schools, they think that a charter school is a charter school. They're all the same. And, across our portfolio of schools, we have everything from, like as you mentioned, ACE Academy, Strict Discipline Academy. We have a school that's only for children of special needs. We have blended learning schools, cyber learning schools, theme curriculum, pretty much everything under the sun. So I think that is maybe one of the most interesting ones to me. And as the head of our state association, you've probably seen everything under the sun as well. Can you talk, a little bit about, that myth and maybe some of the more interesting types or models of charter schools that you've seen across the state?
Yeah, it is the exciting part, Jonathan. I tend to put it this way. saying charter schools are all the same is like talking about ice cream. Okay, all ice cream is cold and sweet. What people really love about it, though, is all the different flavors, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's got their own. And that's what you see with people expressing the idea of charter schools is they're meeting a local need. They're responding, or educators get a chance to come together and design something that they have in mind that they know will work and inspire kids to better learning. Actually, we'd put it in the positive sense here too, is charter schools are more innovative, have the ability to be more innovative. They're creative from scratch. So you can actually design it around an adjudicated youth program, or one of the other interesting solutions I think we bring to the table is to addressing the needs of English language learners or communities that are assimilating this country. You guys are familiar with this in spades, but mm-hmm. what a remarkable way that Dearborn public schools may be overwhelmed with the influx of immigrants, but a single charter school can design itself to meet the needs of its particular community. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of what we add to the public school system.
Absolutely. And you talked shortly, too, about the state budget and how we are a public school and how that's impacted some of the recent budget activities. As we explore kind of the advocate piece and the great work MAPSA does in that space, can you share a little bit about the state budget of the current status and where we're at and the impact that's had on the charter schools here in Michigan?
Yeah, you could use the word, Janelle, shock, because why would you say that, Dan? Because everybody, what the governor had originally proposed, what the House and Senate proposed, were relatively similar. They all had increases. They were using some similar concepts. And then all of a sudden we got into September and bang. What is this about is a good question for people to ask. It's certainly the governor wanted to add new revenues to the whole budget process, primarily for roads and funding schools. Now the legislature is holding out because she's used this new authority to redirect the way they allocated money. Why are those two things important? Because that's the bargain. That's the negotiation that's really going on. And we're one of many items that are on the negotiating table. And that's a frustrating thing, frankly. And I've said this multiple times, we are public education. So I think that's offensive for anybody to put us in that position, to put children and schools in that position, to use them as leverage for political agendas. So we need to make sure that that doesn't happen again and speak up loudly and boldly. I want to encourage people that are listening. One, I do think ultimately this will be restored, but it might take months because these are huge political differences that exist in Lansing between the governor's office and the agenda she has where the legislature wants to go. And we don't rise to that level as a single issue. There's 147 vetoes we're one of, and then all these budget allocations. So I think we need to speak up loud and long, and at some point that'll get restored, but that just isn't the right thing to do.
And MAPS has been speaking up throughout this process. Can you share with us a few of the things that your association has taken the lead on and making sure that the voices of the schools in the state are amplified?
Yeah, and it's an organic thing. Here, sometimes you're prompting something. Here's something we ought to be speaking up about. This was organic. People were just frustrated in the ways I just described at what took place. So giving them a vehicle and a means and a direction. Email is something that's easy to use. We've had 10,000 people. We did that in the first week. 10,000 people spoke up and said, we don't want this to happen this way. And they sent letters or emails to the governor and the state and Senate. Both. So that's 30,000 emails that went out, phone calls. People have been showing up at coffee hours. We would continue to ask people to do both of those things. I think we have to be consistent in saying this isn't right. I'll make a pause here, Janelle. No offense to our good elected officials, but sometimes their attention diminishes, like attention deficit students, and they'll forget about us if we don't stay on the top of their minds. They can weather something out in a few weeks or a month, and I think we need to keep saying, wait a second, no, this was the way we wanted to fund students in charter schools. Our public schools and have public school students and deserve the same kind of funding as all other public schools. So emails, phone calls, coffee hours, and then telling your story. We're doing some things on social media. We're calling it the Pawn Challenge, but it's basically saying, look, this is the way this is impacting us. We were going to expand our literacy programming to meet the needs of English language learning kids. We're not going to be able to implement that without this year's increased funding. I challenged three other people to tell their story and then tag the governor, tag their House member, tag their Senate member, and we'll get people's attention that way besides telling some important stories about the work charter schools are doing. There's other vehicles. We'll keep up until till they've heard us and they've changed what they've done.
What are some other options, I think, for your listeners or our listeners in ways that they can continue to get involved? I know you mentioned the different types of media campaigns and things like that, but do you have any other ideas for ways that individuals can continue to make their voice heard?
Yeah, it's a great idea, great concept, but something that somebody should always do, but this is a good opportunity to do that, heightened awareness, get them into your school. It's one thing we're sitting here sharing the stories because we all get the privilege of showing up at some of these schools and seeing the remarkable things people are doing. The majority of folks, certainly elected officials, have not been in a charter school. They don't know what they're talking about until they see it, touch it, feel it, meet the people there. So having a chance to do that is a really good opportunity. Well, why do I want to come visit? Because you got this budget thing going on. I need you to show up. And then tell the story, have a board member there, have a parent there, have an educator there.
So the budget discussion is currently ongoing. And I think what I heard you say is that if we don't continue to keep this front and center, that lawmakers could move on from it. When do they anticipate moving on with the budget discussion for next year?
Yeah, this is like talking about how the Lions are going to do in a particular football season. Everybody's going to debate it throughout the year, right? No offense to our Lions fans out there. But there is an opportunity for it to go fast, although I mentioned these two big political issues, more revenue and the governor's budget authority. That could take a while. So the chances it could be resolved before the end of the calendar year, but it might also get lopped into next year's budget cycle, which means you're talking about into late spring or maybe even the early summer before it gets resolved.
And certainly, you know, this is one very important legislative item. There's others that are impacting schools as well, or could impact them in the future. One that I know MAPSA was heavily involved with is the A to F implementation. So can you talk a little bit about the status of that and where that's going for the future?
Yeah, this falls into the category of meaningful accountability. And I know, Dan, why do you say that when you talk about A through F? Because I think one of the frustrations and mistakes we've made in Michigan generally. So we don't tell educators how to succeed. What is it? When do I get there? When is success? And we all know the inadequacies of test scores and things like that, but at some point you got to have some kind of a measure. That's what the A through F system was intended to do, is to not only put something in place, a singular kind of measure, report card, and then have it stay there and be consistent for a period of time so everybody could look at it and go, okay, well, that's what we need to do to get a B. That's what we need to do to get an A. Lots of arguing about it, even after the law passed. Dr. Rice, our new state superintendent, started August 1st at the September state board meeting in Saginaw. He basically said, look, ladies and gentlemen, we can all feel however we want to feel about it, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I'm going to implement the law. And he's working at that as we speak. So we're all still trying to figure out how they're going to answer some of the questions that were left to the department to answer, where the cut scores are and how that's going to look, whether it will reflect the calculations of the index system or not, but an important discussion for us all.
And so it sounds as if the implementation is very much in the air right now and folks are trying to figure all that out. What does that mean for schools and the work that they're doing day to day?
I would guess, and you guys are leaders in this at the CMU, John Engler Center for Charter Schools, in using data and using it. So I would guess your schools and other charter schools are already in line with where the state may end up. It's going to change some, but I don't think this is new to charter school folks generally. But what will it mean, Orlando? It'll be hopefully aligning some of these systems we've had, an index system, the federal forest rankings, what does this new law look like? The ideal would be they would come together and have some common elements of it, and you'd know here's one report card that we're all going to be shown based on our data from MEEP and all, or, you know, the different scores, proficiency, growth, graduation rates, but it'd be aligned and consistent.
And are there other legislative items either currently coming through or things that have been passed that are in the implementation phase that MAPS is watching right now that could have impact on schools coming up soon?
Yeah, a lot of discussion about the third grade reading law and the ongoing concern about literacy scores in Michigan. That's out there. People looking to hold or maybe eliminate the holdback provision so you wouldn't to retain third graders. I think the focus on literacy has been helpful. We're still working at that in Michigan. It has not taken, but the importance of it is certainly there. But yeah, there's some unknowns to it. But hey, this is about making sure kids are learning to read and that schools are prepared to really focus on it well. So I think it's a little too early to tell, but that's an important discussion out there that would affect all of us, obviously, whatever they do. Leave it alone or change it needs to be paid attention to.
So as you think about the legislative process and the upcoming year, it sounds like a lot of time and focus is going to be tied up in the budget, in the A to F letter grades. Is there anything else on the horizon that you anticipate that you are keeping your eye on from a charter school perspective?
Yeah, something your listeners, I'm sure, are thinking about is talent in the supply of educators. I don't know that, I didn't mention it already because I don't know what Lansing would do. There's not a idea that's been floated out that the legislature could pass and all of a sudden that problem goes away. To me, that is about changing the way we talk about education. It is something that schools can do. I'm just find remarkable that some of our charter schools, some of the schools you guys authorize, have 100% retention. Well, why is that? Probably their culture, probably the way those educators are supported and encouraged in what they do. Compensation is always out there, but I think it's those other intangible things. And I think we've done a disservice to these professional educators in Michigan in the way we talk about being a teacher. We haven't inspired them anymore. We haven't held them up where it's not the mission that it used to be. Still highly respected profession, but I think we give a lot of negative discussion about it. So I'm not sure what those solutions are, Orlando, but you turned it around, would have asked our listeners what's at the top of their mind. Finding educators in some of these key places is the most critical problem they have.
And a lot of these topics, obviously very important to schools, and MAPSA truly, as the State Charter School Association, is out on the front lines advocating for these every day. And I know everybody really appreciates that. As you've been a part of this movement now, like we said, for 20 plus years, Dan, what's the most rewarding part of your job and what truly keeps you passionate about this topic?
Yeah, Jonathan, you were asking the question about stories, and if we had a lot more time, we could sit here and reminisce about a lot of them. It is seeing those remarkable things that people do every day in their communities. The Charlton Heston Academy and its great work. Kids in adjudicated youth centers or homeless centers, online learning and what it means to kids who just can't get out to a school. Innovative high schools. I know you guys authorized the Manoogian School. They celebrated 50 years, 25 as a private school, 25 as a charter school. They just do some remarkable education there. That's just, it's exciting to see and meet all the people that are doing remarkable things and knowing that we're contributing to improving public education. Going back to the myths we started out talking about, one of those is we detract from the public education system. That's nonsense. We add to it. There is something about this. It's like friendly competition. It's moving the bar up, saying, well, that's pretty cool. If they can implement a Montessori program, why couldn't we do that at the district? Well, you can. So just go do it. So it is seeing those remarkable things, Janelle, that people have done and accomplished and how it's inspired traditional districts to change and to move, and our kids and our communities and our parents benefit from that.
Well, a couple last questions before you leave, and we want to first recognize and appreciate your 20 years of working in charter schools. And with that, wondering if there's one lesson that you want to share with us that you in your 20 years of service.
Wow, one lesson. My elementary school teachers would tell you I don't like multiple choice questions. I always never want to be pinned down to one. But, you know, it is believing in what we do, I think, is the key to that. The criticisms are going to be there. This is about change. This is about improving. This is about innovation. And innovators always take a lot of criticism. So it is something about just knowing we know what we're doing and that we're doing good things, not listening to the noise, and just moving forward with the positive things that are happening. I think that's critical.
Dan, let's take a little bit of step back away from the charter conversation for a moment. One of the things that we've been doing with all of our guests is to ask this great question on if you had a teacher growing up that had a great impact on you. And if you can recall one, could you share a little bit about that person and what their impact was on you growing up?
Yeah, a number of them. Certainly one was a high school government teacher who I grew up in the Lansing area, so it was easier for him not to allow that topic of government to stay in the classroom. And so he required that we reach out. We had to go visit a local government meeting, a county government meeting, and a state government meeting, and I met my legislators for the first time there. And I thought, well, this is pretty cool. These people get paid to do this. So I majored in political science at Michigan State as a result of that inspiration. But I also got a call one day, this was only a couple of years ago, from my fourth grade teacher. Hi, that. Dan. I don't know that you remember me, but I just heard you on the radio, and you did such a good job. I thought, there's my fourth grade teacher. She is still encouraging me. So I called her back. She was shocked, but I called her back.
That's amazing.
Do you want to give her a shout out? What's her name?
Now you're going to catch me. It's on a Monday morning. I can't remember her name, but yeah, absolutely. She was a great teacher, inspired all of us in our class. Great.
Well, I'm sure that with this new podcast, you'll continue to build supporters out there and remind folks of the good work that you're doing. And we want to just extend a warm welcome to and thank you to Dan for joining us today for this podcast. Thank you, Dan. Great seeing you again, and look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thanks. It's a great opportunity to be here. So.